You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, I want to talk about coronavirus again, because coronavirus has reared its ugly head in a plentiful way again.
Well, I see that the numbers are way up in certain areas of the United States. So yeah, let's have that conversation.
40 states have higher COVID rates, 40. There's only 10 that are staying about the same. Nobody, except for perhaps Washington, D.C., and I think one other place, is getting a little bit of a reduction. So if you look at the graph, we really have taken a big rise. Why would that be? Well, truth be told, we don't know. But a couple of things have come to light. One is that the virus has mutated to a point where it is 10 times more contagious than it was before, which would mean that it's 10 times easier for someone to get it if exposed than previously. However, it has not changed in its death rate or hospitalization rates as far as, in other words, it became more contagious, but it didn't become more deadly.
So in other words, in the ratios. Right. And do you remember what I said quite some time ago when I was doing a lot of writing about COVID? And to be quite honest with you, it's kind of gone off my radar screen most recently with other things that have been happening around the country. But I've said for a long time that we would find a lot more cases of COVID as the United States, which takes the lead in COVID testing, tests, you know, so many more people. I understand at least listening to the President Trump's medical team that we're now testing about 500,000 people a day. That's a tremendous amount of testing. And as I said before, with that amount of testing, one would, you know, with common sense, should tell somebody that our COVID rates are going to go up. But the thing to watch are the ratios of hospitalizations and deaths.
Yes.
So is that what's happening right now?
Well, it's definitely going up. And, you know, there's this constant back and forth between people and even between you and I about if it's just because they're testing more, so they're finding more. No, actually, more people are getting sick right now. And well, that's just the fact.
Well, take a look at the behavior that's been going on. And, you know, I saw a map recently. And it was on Fox News, but it's also been on ABC News and CNN and everything, because I switch around the stations and watch everything to try to get a more global experience of what the media is presenting. And if you take a look at the maps, those states, it's interesting to find out what states are rising, as you sort of indicated, and what states aren't rising at all. Mm-hmm. And I've even got some questions about that. But the states that are rising, notice how many of those are states where they have beaches, where they have coastlines. And then remember that those are areas that have, you know, opened up their states with regards to going back to employment, opening back the bars, opening back the restaurants, states where you don't see a lot of social distancing. And then look at, I think this is the important, one of the important stats for me, or bellwethers for me, is that remember before how it was the older people, the seniors and the older people that were really, who are high risk, who were contracting, you know, COVID and being hospitalized and dying at the highest rates. Now that paradigm has completely changed, and the high risk as far as who's going to be contagious, who's contracting COVID, is people in their 20s and 30s, right?
Okay,
and I keep saying COVID, but
again,
I meant COVID.
But here again, I think that you may be buying into what the news is telling you.
Oh, really?
And the figures don't support that.
Well, what do the figures say?
The figures since COVID really started in earnest, which was back in March, was about 25% of the hospitalizations were younger people. They made up adults under 50 and young adults, 25% of the hospitalizations. That's still about the same case right now. Some places like Texas have risen about 3% in the younger people, but the other states are staying pretty steady at that figure, which is interesting because that is not what the news is reporting.
Okay. Well, since I've already told you that I've pretty much taken COVID off my radar screen because I'm following what's going on in law enforcement issues right now in the upheaval that we have in the country, why don't you just sort of educate me and then let's have a conversation about that?
Well, infections in any kind of flu or virus tend to infect the younger people more because they are the people that are out and about more. They're the people that are having to go to their job. You have a lot of young people that are working, say, in fast food restaurants and those types of places. They're essential workers. So they tend to get any type of virus more. That being said, I mean, where we're seeing the big impact as far as, you know, death and very much illness are the people over 50 are getting sicker because they tend to have some comorbidities, right? The truth is, I don't know why, and I don't think that despite all of the different opinions that you hear from Dr. Fauci and, you know, just so many people, nobody's really in agreement as to why this is the case. But the places that have done really well with their COVID infections, like Australia and New Zealand and some of those places, really were because they were very, very strict on masks and going out.
You know, Japan's an excellent example of that, right? With their very, very low COVID rates. And you look at the Japanese culture and their community, they're so densely populated and densely packed in, especially in their major cities like, you know, Yokohama, and, you know, Tokyo, Hiroshima, you know, some of these giant metropolitan areas. It's just really incredible that, you know, the COVID has not spread in those communities. But it, like you said, if you look at the way their culture operates, and this is way before COVID, right? They wear masks all the time, you know, and they can't practice social distancing because they're so packed in. But I mean, that's a good model. But you know, what's interesting, when I looked at the map, as I referred to earlier, man, I've got some questions I don't know anybody has an answer to. For instance, okay, so we're in Texas, and right above us to our north is Oklahoma. And on the west side of Oklahoma, you know, you've got COVID states. On top of Oklahoma, you've got COVID states. You know, they're red. In other words, mm-hmm. there's increases in COVID. And to the east, there's states that are red. And us, who are on their southern border, we're a COVID state. What the heck with Oklahoma? You know, they're completely surrounded by states where the COVID stats have gone up. And they show white. So what's going on there?
Well, again, I don't know. But here's, you know, here's how some experts say that this should be mitigated is, you know, we're testing, right?
Right.
And it's not about doing zillions of tests. It's about testing the people that are symptomatic, not all the people that are not symptomatic. And I can tell you just by us who are not symptomatic of anything, trying to get a test, I'm thinking maybe we shouldn't do that because we're taking the place of somebody else that needs it. And getting tested is very, very difficult. The places are full for days and days and days. You can't even get an appointment. And if you don't have insurance that covers it, it's about $200 to get a test. A lot of people that might have symptoms maybe can't afford that. So what would be important to some researchers, and I tend to agree, is test the people that do have symptoms. And then you do the contact tracing. And those people are the ones that have to quarantine, the people that have been exposed. And that is what is not happening in our country right now. And for it to be effective, Ron, at least 70% of those people have to stay quarantined. And if they are not staying quarantined, or if they don't know that they were exposed, or they do know and they just choose because they feel fine to go out, that's where we're having the problem. You don't hear that on the news. You hear the mask, the whole mask argument. You know, people are suing their states for having to wear masks. We have got to be responsible about this and look at the countries that have done a good job in mitigating COVID, because we are out of control, and we are fast approaching the point in time in our country where we're seriously going to be out of control with this disease. And, you know, it's going to affect a lot of people that have, you know, conditions, or whose grandson comes home with it, or, you know, we've got kids going back to school in September, and we really need to be thoughtful about how we're handling this. One of the most important things that I think that we can do in our country, that other countries that have been successful in mitigating COVID have done, is that when they're doing the testing, they only start reopening when that testing rate is less than 5% positivity. We have been opening at more than 20% positivity. And I think that that's been a lot of our problem.
You know, this affects people on so many different levels. You know, we're talking about the medical level. We've, you know, sort of alluded to the employment level and, you know, our economy and our lifestyles. But, you know, also psychologically, it's so frustrating. It can be pretty depressing for people. You know, a great example, not of depression, but of frustration, is that we had SIP, you know, the first time, social isolation. We pretty much left our offices and went out to the ranch, and we're basically hiding out at the ranch. And we're very proud of ourselves. We were staying away from everybody. We weren't going anywhere. We were ordering our groceries online and just, I mean, you know, doing everything that we possibly could. And then we clear that period, things start to open up in Texas, and then we get visited by a friend from California. And then after they leave, you know, like, what was it, like a day, 2 days later after they left, all of a sudden they call us to report that they're having serious COVID symptoms.
And had gone to the hospital.
And we were just devastated by that, because we had spent some time, not a huge amount of time, but I think about half a day with these people, who are just wonderful people. This is not their fault. And I truly think that they got it in California during their flight out here from California, whatever. And then what did we have to do? We had to go back to ground zero again, start all over again, and get out of our offices, pack up all of our stuff, transfer our phones, and come back out to the ranch and work for another 2 weeks.
And see nobody.
Yes. Right? Not our kids who live out here, not close friends who live out here that we're always hanging out with. So it's very frustrating and psychologically a little bit damaging.
Well, and it tells you can virtually do everything right and still be exposed. So it's just very discouraging in the United States that we are at the level that we're at. And, you know, I hear the things that people in other countries are saying about us. In fact, Europe has closed flights into the EU countries from people from the United States. You cannot go there.
If you're from the U.S.?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So that turned around, didn't it?
Yeah,
we were doing the same thing to them.
And you know what? I don't blame them, because they've been hard hit as well, and they don't need it, and we don't need it. So the problem is, Ron, this is, again, taking a toll on so many businesses in our country and so many employees and so many families.
Well, can I take you on a side journey for just a second? Because you're actually, of the two of us, you're the person that keeps the closest contact with our great friends, Giovanni, who's in Italy, in Florence, Italy, who's been on this program a couple of times. We've actually done shows from Florence, Italy. What's going on there? What does Giovanni say?
Well, they, you know, as you know, in Italy, they were very hard hit. And they were also very, very, very strict about people staying indoors, to the point where they were fined huge sums of money if they were found to be outdoors going anywhere, walking around, doing anything without a particular destination like the store or the pharmacy.
Right. I remember specifically, I think it was a 300 euro fine, which is a lot of money, or a 3,000 euro fine. Yeah, I can't remember which one it was, but it was pretty.
It was more like 3,000.
And it was pretty draconian. And I remember having conversations with Giovanni, and he was telling us that, man, they had the police patrolling right outside the streets. They had the military out there patrolling, and literally anybody that was walking around was immediately, being encountered by law enforcement or the military, and you had better have a note from your mother as to where you were going. Remember the pictures, the ghostly pictures
of Florence, Italy, just beautiful, beautiful
but ghostly
pictures.
At the same time, because nobody's on the street.
But to your question, they are absolutely doing fine, and they are at the seashore as we speak. They have finally been let out of their houses, and they can go somewhere. And they chose right away to go to the seashore for about 10 days and spend their time. They've sent pictures over of them on the beach. They look wonderful. I don't know how they stayed so in shape during being at home cooking for all those months.
Yeah, that's disgraceful. When you take a look and they got these killer bodies out on the beach, and you're going, what?
But Italy is doing great. And I think it was because of the measures that they took. And where in the United States, us privileged, entitled people are saying, well, you can't do that to us. You know what? It happened to have worked. So there's two schools of thought on this, and seeing this whole explosion again and the risk it puts people at in so many ways, health-wise, work-wise, all of those things, I just think that maybe we needed to have taken stronger measures.
Well, sure. Let me talk about one thing that really bothers me, and we'll do it really quick. But the thing that I don't like is the way that the medical community have politicized the statistics. And so, here's a great example. It's coming out now that a number of tracing medical facilities, and what I mean by tracing is somebody comes back positive, asymptomatic for COVID, and then they're going to try to trace, how did you get it? Where did you go?
Positive
with COVID, right. What did you do? Where did you come in contact with? What were you doing? What were your behaviors? And they are specifically being told not to ask whether they were involved in any of these national protests or civil unrest that we're seeing. Right? Well, I mean, come on.
I agree totally that it's being politicized. But listen, there's other ways to get around that question. You could ask, have you been in any large crowds lately? You could ask, have you been around any of the protesters? The word protesters doesn't even matter to me in it, but you can get the information that you need if you ask the right questions. God knows that they do it in polling all the time, where they twist questions in any which way to get the answer that they want. They could absolutely do that and get the information, and they should be. Instead, our PC political correctness is harming all of us.
Yeah, and it has, no place whatsoever in the scientific study of medicine and pandemics.
None.
Hey, how about a cup of coffee?
You got it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DronMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Well, continuing on with the COVID conversation, Ron, I want to talk about some of the long-term effects of having coronavirus. And one of the things that we see right now in everything about coronavirus is so many mixed messages. Would you agree?
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, everybody says something different. So you get a Dr. Fauci on and he says one thing, and then you get some other expert on and he says the opposite. So nobody knows what to believe.
And you know what? That goes back to what I've written about when this thing started from the beginning. They're at that third level. I mean, they have good intentions. They're trying very hard. They're under a lot of pressure, but they still don't know what they don't know. So I kind of, as a person that's the fly on the wall, you know, watching the media, listening to different people, these different medical experts, I can't help but feel like being a ping pong ball and getting bounced back and forth and back and forth. And what information is credible information? What information should I trust, or should I just trust my own common sense?
Well, and now we're getting more science behind this. So I want to talk about that a little bit. It's disturbing, but it needs to be said. So there was a pathologist that started opening up people after they died from coronavirus to see what happened to their organs.
And in my industry, Linda, we would call that an autopsy.
Yes. She worked on 38 brains, 87 lungs, and 42 hearts. And what she saw was that some of the organs had far too many of a special cell that's rarely found in those organs. And it kind of looked like a dengue fever type reaction. Now, not related to dengue fever, not the same symptoms, but it just had the destruction of the cells in those organs that was similar with dengue fever. So this was a big surprise. And it started them looking at other things. What happens with the coronavirus is that it causes clotting in all of those organs.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Very dangerous. So now they see that some of these things that they didn't know are becoming a little bit more clear. They found that the virus that attacks the lungs and the brain, the kidneys, the liver, the gastrointestinal tract, and the spleen, and that some of the organs have widespread clotting, little bitty clots.
Yeah, but you know, those are the ones that break free and get into the heart and kill you.
Yes. Well, what they found was when people have complained during having COVID of having a foggy brain, of being unable to think or hold a thought, they thought that they would find a lot of damage in the heart and the brain tissue, and that they did not find.
Well, you know,
that was a big surprise to them.
Well, you know, when you have a lack of oxygenated blood going up into the brain, that's, you know, hypoxia or anoxia, right? And the brain, obviously, it needs the circulatory system. It needs that oxygenated blood, you know, coming into the brain, washing through the brain to allow the brain to function. And when you get these presentations of fogginess, and it was interesting because our friend from California was expressing that, hey, I woke up every morning, you know, like 13 days, I've got fogginess, then, you know, that's an indication of that.
Well, and what they did not find in their studies is what surprised them. So they did not find in the heart, they did not find a hardening of the arteries in the heart as they thought because people were having heart attacks. They did not find the damage in the brain. But what they did find, they didn't find the virus so much in the brain. What they did find is all these little blood clots, which can kill brain cells, which are not reparable, right? They cannot be repaired, and the body doesn't repair them. They are gone forever. So once you don't have the oxygen that you need and brain cells start to die, you don't get those back.
That's correct. They're gone forever.
So it's a lifelong problem for a lot of people, and that includes all of the different organs that we're talking about that are damaged during the process of you having coronavirus, a lot of that does not repair. So what we're now seeing, which is very scary, is lifelong consequences of having COVID.
So let me give you a scenario and find out if you agree. You know, there's so many people, especially young people, that like to work out, right? So we have joggers and we have CrossFit people and, you know, we have treadmill people and people going to gyms and people trying to exercise and stay in shape. Well, from what you're telling me, if it's affecting not only the brain, but it's affecting the heart, it's affecting the lungs, it's affecting the liver, it's affecting the kidneys. Those are all extremely important organs that function not only while you're walking around during the day, but especially while you're working out, all of those things. So what I'm hearing from you is that if this is lifelong, that entire lifestyle of working out, that may very well go by the wayside, or it could exacerbate or make worse the pre-existing medical condition. And when these people are working out, they could be literally killing themselves bit by bit.
Well, but what has happened from these studies, because these little, what they call micro clots that are found in the lungs that are inhibiting your ability to breathe as you normally would, micro clots found in the heart, in the brain, in the different areas. Now that they know this, now they are starting to give blood thinners to people, which is just going to be life-saving. But people need to know that, and they need to get on those blood thinners. And this is fairly new information. I mean, it's coming out quickly from researchers, but it's still fairly new. And what I'm seeing is that a lot of places are still quite behind, and I'll say the VA is one of them.
Boy, can we just talk about that for a second? Because our friend from California is a veteran, and he got pretty sick, and he went to the VA, and on the phone, he was so frustrated by the VA refusing to give him any medications that we've talked about before, mm-hmm. right?
And hydroxychloroquine or remsivivor.
They wouldn't give it to him. Yeah. And he said, why aren't you giving me these things? This guy, he'd had been in the hospital in the VA. They kept him overnight. They filled him with fluids and they kicked him out. And he said, while he was there, there were scores of veterans in there that were in worse shape than him. They're giving them those drugs. They sent this guy home. He was in really bad shape. This is one of the two toughest son of a guns I've ever met in my life. I've known in my entire life, you know, in the Marine Corps. And they are not giving this guy these important drugs because he said, well, we're not authorized to give you. If we release you, we're not authorized to give you these drugs. And I was absolutely floored. I thought President Trump and the VA had moved past all of this crap, and we were trying to help our veterans, for God's sake.
And you have to wonder, based on this information that they have just come out with about the microclots, if a blood thinner would not help somebody like our friend. You know, it's that this information needs to get out, because otherwise people are going to be having lifelong problems from having had coronavirus. I don't want to divert the issue, but it just keeps coming to my mind that I have such a hard time in my mind wrapping my head around that this is just a virus. I just have to believe that this was manipulated or developed in a laboratory and released on the world in some way, whether accidentally or on purpose, I don't know. But
so you're referring to the fact that it might, I don't mean to interrupt mm-hmm. you, but I mean, I think at least what I'm getting from you is that you think that there is a distinct possibility that China manipulated this virus as a bioweapon. And it got either intentionally released or by accident, it just got out of control and left the lab, and now we're stuck with it.
I do think that. And I think that American people need to take it more seriously. We need to take our own precautions. We need to be responsible in our own ways. We are not children. We don't need the politicians to tell us to wear a mask or not wear a mask. We need to be responsible on our own and think about our own well-being, our family's well-being, and others' well-being, and do the things, whatever those things are, that will protect yourself and others. And let's not put all this on the politicians as though they are the be-all and end-all, because we've already seen that our politicians are complete idiots.
Well, yeah, you know, we go round and round with these dysfunctional politicians all the time, but I like your salient point, and if I can interpret what you're saying, people that have good common sense, people that educate themselves, people that do a little bit of reading, and incredible, not the internet, but credible medical sources, listening to credible medical professionals, should have enough common sense, like I think we have, to be able to protect themselves. And then at the same time, you and I both understand, and I think a lot of our listeners and followers understand, that you can't fix stupid. So you can only try to protect yourself, like we're doing. You don't have to rely on politicians to give out orders, edicts, directions, and things like this. Take a look at the stats that are happening in your own area. You should be at least mindful of that. You know, what are your statistics in your own area? And then if you need to SIP, right, or shelter in place, if you need to, you know, sort of cut off, you know, visits from people that are out of the area, that might be carriers, you don't know who they've come in contact with, then maybe that's probably what you should do. Is it going to be frustrating? Absolutely. But at the same time, you got to sort of balance that, just like with us, and we both have separate businesses and a business together. And, you know, it's very difficult to run a business. And so you sort of have to improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Well, sure. And it's even more difficult to run it if you're dead. So, you know, you have to be realistic about this. And this is not about the politicians. We've already established that the politicians don't know what the heck they're doing in this country. So, and they're people just like us. They're people just like all of us. So use your own brain. Make your own family decisions that make sense for you, and keep yourself safe and keep other people safe. I mean, this is not hard. And I would say to people that are COVID positive, if they find that they're having continuing problems with breathing, I would ask doctors about a blood thinner, because everything that I have read, and you can read yourselves, everything that I've read says that these microclots are in your organs. They affect the neurons in your brain. They affect the organs. And this can be long-term if it's not taken care of.
You know, and let me say something, because I do have a modicum of training in medicine. And obviously being a patient from time to time, although extremely rare, do I ever go see a doctor for anything. But here's what I know about people, and I've even been guilty of this myself in my younger years. We think that doctors know everything about medicine, and that's simply not correct. And they don't know everything about this pandemic. They don't know everything about COVID-19. We've already expressed that. Even the senior, most knowledgeable medical people on pandemics and immunization and viruses in the United States really don't know everything. But I guess my caution would be this, or maybe my advice would be this. Don't necessarily let doctors take you down the road and tell you what to do. You need to be asking probative questions. Don't be intimidated when you go into the doctor's office so that you don't ask probative questions. In other words, you know, when you're talking about, hydroxychloroquine or something, if you feel that you need that, and you're seeing in other statistics and in other medical studies that it seems to be working, my question to the doctor would be, sometimes you have to sort of tell the doctors what you want as the patient. My question would be bringing up the name of that drug and say, do you think that you should prescribe hydroxychloroquine for me? And hear what the doctor has to say. And then my next question would be, if he's sort of balking at that, is it contraindicated? Is it something that would hurt me? If it's not going to hurt me, and I see that it can be used successfully in other people, and I am experiencing symptoms, by the way, I'm not, you know, this is not a situation where I'm in the doctor's office because I'm not experiencing anything. Right. You know, kind of like our friend, ask the question, you know, why can you prescribe it for me? If it's not contraindicated, then for Christ's sake, prescribe it to me.
And if that doctor does not fit what you feel is best for yourself, find another doctor.
You know, I mean, exactly
there's not
right.
only one doctor, there's lots of doctors. So, you know, we all have to do what's right for us. We can't just be lemmings and small children taking the word of everybody else. Do your own research. Live by your own common sense that keeps you and others safe. And if you do get infected, God forbid, then do the things that keep others safe first. Keep yourself safe and get the treatment that you need. Okay. I mean, this is all common sense, but it seems like we're all letting politicians tell us what to do. And I find that very frustrating because these are people that I always say can't even balance their own checkbook, and they're not going to tell me, you know, how I'm going to handle my personal life.
And you know, and I agree. And I would go further and I'd say, on the other hand, if you're talking to the doctor and during the course of your discussions with the doctors about COVID and symptomology and, you know, a treatment regimen, if you're getting a deer in the headlights look from your doctor and he's not answering your questions, or he seems, you know, more speculative than forensic in his medical opinions, then boy, that ought to be a red flag to you. And I would move on and I'd find another doctor, because these are serious issues and you deserve to have serious, credible responses from your primary care physician.
Yep. It's your life and you only get one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think that's really good information that you're bringing up, some of the new stuff I wasn't even aware of. And, you know, we hope our listeners and followers will pay attention to that. Are you ready for your last cup of coffee?
I am ready.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Changing gears a little bit, have you ever been a Facebook prisoner?
I have not been a Facebook prisoner.
I have.
I don't go on often enough to be put in prison.
Okay, so you know me. I'm sort of a prolific poster on Facebook. And I became a Facebook prisoner, like pretty much everybody I know from one, you know, at one time or another that are involved in, I don't know, the law enforcement, forensic community, people that are interested in politics and everything else. And it's, and you know, it was interesting when I became a Facebook prisoner a few months ago, it was for something completely innocuous. I mean, it had, you know, there was nothing bad whatsoever. It was just, I guess the Facebook person, you know, the overseer of Facebook, and I know there's thousands of them, probably just disagreed with what I had to say. Well, it was nothing racist. It was nothing homophobic. It was nothing countercultural. It was nothing anti-LGBTQRSTUV. I mean, it was nothing like that at all. I think just the overseer, the specter, the Facebook phantom, as I call them, just didn't happen to agree with what I had to say. So all of a sudden, bam, I'm on restriction. And I don't remember how long it was. It, you know, that didn't matter to me. What mattered to me and what continues to matter to me is how oppressive Facebook has become. It's so politically correct, so oppressive.
It's the cancel culture of canceling out conservative opinions. It is not just Facebook. It is all of the social media sites, or most of them. And it's Amazon, and it's YouTube, and it's Facebook and LinkedIn and all of those places that have decided what we all should see and what we shouldn't see, which is interesting because the left is supposed to be, they profess to be more tolerant, but that's not true at all. It actually is the right that's much more tolerant than the left, because we don't cancel out the left, yet they cancel out the right. And, you know, this is, as well as the media, as well as the politicians, they all do it. And it's ridiculous. So
I had enough of it.
I don't blame you.
I had enough of it. And I know, speaking of overseers, I know our overseers on America Out Loud, Malcolm Out Loud, himself does not, you can't find him on Facebook. He does not participate in Facebook as a social media medium because of that. And so what I've decided to do, and matter of fact, I just recently put out a post to, you know, all my hundreds of followers and friends that, hey, look, by the end of the month, I'm going to wean myself off of Facebook, and you're just really not going to find me there posting anything other than, hey, you know, here's a cool picture of my dog, or here's a picture of our family, or, you know me, I love to cook, and I'm working, by the way, on my COVID cookbook. And so I like to post pictures of Chef Ron cooking wonderful meals. But other than that, I'm sorry, I'm gone. And I found a more inviting, more welcoming social media platform, and that's where I'm going.
Well, what's it called?
Well, it's called Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. And it's a brand new social media location for common sense conservatives, or just average people, moderate people, people that are tolerant, and people that want to have political discussions, or they want to talk about what's happening in the world. That's where I'm
going to
go.
Yeah, and it's not a radical site from what I understand, and I'm going to join you there on Parler. It's not radical. It's just common sense people having discussions. We're not talking about racist. We're not talking about violent. We're not talking about any of those things. But, you know, on Facebook, they've had posts of people doing horrible things on Facebook, and they haven't taken those down. When they've had suicides, they've had murders, they've had all kinds of different things, and they see fit to leave those, but they don't see fit to leave, what are the two girls that do the show?
Oh, Diamond and Silk.
Diamond and Silk, yeah.
They're not there anymore.
They don't choose to leave those kind of people on, which I love listening to them.
Oops, there's the dog chasing a squirrel. it's exactly right. You know, this counterculture, you know, and I wrote about it recently in an article that's on America Out Loud called The Disunited States and the 12 Barometers of Trouble Brewing. And the counterculture is a huge issue, that social media oppression, the oppression of conservative thought and ideas and values is certainly out there. And I have just finally chosen not to participate in it. Mm-hmm. Now, also in that article, what I discussed is that with all of this going on, people have just had enough of this. And as I said, as far as living arrangements and, you know, where you live, what city you live in, what area, what region, what jurisdiction, what state you live in, if you find that it's oppressive, if it's politically oppressive, if it's economically oppressive, then if it's religiously oppressive, if taxes are oppressive, I mean, there's a whole list of those things. I said that people are going to leave these unwelcoming, unfriendly, oppressive areas, and they're going to find new areas that are not oppressive, that are friendly, and that are welcoming. And I see mass migrations. And the same thing with Facebook.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting about what you just said about the areas? It is that people really could change that if they chose to. So if they live in an area that's oppressive, they can change it by getting politically involved and voting in people that think like they do. But that is not happening. And at some point, you know, you lose that ability because the scale tips where there's more people not like you than like you, and you've got to go, you know, which was our case in California. So that, I mean, it's too bad that we don't recognize it a little earlier so that we can save some of these areas in the country. But I agree with you, we are going to have political zones.
Well, you know, it's interesting because just the other day I had a fascinating conversation and interview with Malcolm Out Loud that's going to be on the America Out Loud platform. And we were talking about that. And one of the things in my article about the barometer is, and it was one of the final ones, is that conservatives, common sense conservatives, be they Republicans or they just identify as conservatives or independents, they don't engage politically. They don't. Consistently in the polls, I don't care what poll it is, political poll, if you look, you will see that there's always about 20% of people that have no opinion. They have no opinion. How can you not have an opinion on a pressing question? So that means they're not engaged. The thing that scares me as well is when we have our votes, if we have our federal elections, you know, presidency, Senate, Congress, 20 to 24% of conservatives and Republicans don't even go to the polls. And when you take a look historically, again, at our elections, President Trump is a great one against Hillary Clinton, won by single-digit percentage points. If you look at the Congress, single-digit percentage points. Senate, single-digit percentage points. Gubernatorial elections, often single-digit percentage points. And so when I talk to conservatives and I say, and they tell me that they didn't vote, I say, well, for God's sakes, why wouldn't you engage and exercise your privilege as an American citizen and vote? It says, well, my vote doesn't matter. Are you watching the polls? Do you see that people are winning by, and the wrong people, you know, the left are winning by single digits? Your vote absolutely counts.
Well, and you know what? That would open up a whole nother discussion.
Well, that's where I'm going there.
about the voting and the mail-in ballots and the states and the cities and the counties that will not wash their data and their voter rolls. And we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of deceased people voting somehow. We have
you see these pictures. Mm-hmm. Like I saw it just yesterday, and there is a forklift, and it's got like 20 giant boxes of ballots, and they were just stuffed in a warehouse.
Well, and
they had never been counted. They had never been submitted.
A truck burned up with hundreds of thousands of ballots in it. So I disagree with the vote in ballots. I unless they want to wash their data and they have exact voting rolls.
In other words, they're vetted.
Right. Because if you don't remove people that don't either have the right to vote, have moved, that are voting in two places, or that are deceased, this can't work. And there are states that people, Judicial Watch is going after so many cities and so many states, and they won a big battle in Los Angeles about their voting rolls, and they had
1.5 million. Can you imagine that? 1.5 million just in Los Angeles County, 1.5 million fraudulent votes.
Right. So if you imagine how that can turn an election.
Oh, it turns the gubernatorial election, any Senate, any congressional election, upside down.
The states that do not require voter ID is a huge problem. And for us to sit and say that it harms people or people can't vote or it's discriminatory,
or it's racist or something,
that's just baloney. I mean, you have to have an ID for anything. How about for the control of our country, for the future of our country. I mean, this is the least we can ask, and people are fighting it, and that should raise a red flag to everybody.
No, it's exactly right. You know, give me a great example of what you're just talking about. So yesterday, you know, I had to take the truck in for an oil change, okay? So I take the truck in for the oil change. I think it was $30, and I'm going to pay with my credit card, all right? And the credit card's in my name. The guy had taken down all the information from me because it's a brand new business. I'm establishing as a new client. And I throw in my credit card to pay for the $30. And he says, well, we're required to look at your ID and to write down the last five numbers of your Texas driver's license. So come on, guys and gals. How stupid is this? I mean, you see that Linda's argument is absolutely correct. I mean, if you're going to show your driver's license for a $30 oil change, I don't want to hear anything about racist or, you know, asking to see your driver's license when you're going to one of the most important responsibilities as an American citizen that you have, and that is to vote.
When you tell me that none of those people that we are supposedly discriminated against about showing ID for voting have, when you show me that they have never in their life bought a bottle of alcohol or a beer or a drink and had to show their ID, okay, maybe I'll buy it, but that's not going to happen.
Well, you know, here's another thing. I mean, we could go on and on about this, but you know, like we're at HEB and like we have like maybe 10 items and I want to go through the checkout lane, you know, and there's an automatic, you know, self-checkout lane now, which by the way, I love. I love those damn things. But if I get, and I keep forgetting this, but if I get like a six pack of beer, or with me, it's like cooking wine. So I'll get some Marsala wine and I hit the thing and all of a sudden the scanner machine says, you have to stop. What do I have to do? And even though I'm clearly over 21, I think anybody that looks at Dr. Ron knows he's over 21 years old. The lady has to come over. She goes, I got to see your driver's license.
Yeah.
Right. And that's to buy an
$8. Let's be honest, it is beer. So
shut up.
Anyway. Yeah. So,
but you know, you get the point,
so
right?
The voter ID is important, and Judicial Watch is one of the places that fights for that for the American people. And I heartily support them. And
we just gave we just gave them a donation yesterday. Yep. So very, very worthwhile. I know we're going to give a plug to Judicial Watch. And by the way, they do not sponsor Talking While Married with Dr. Ron and Linda, but when you're talking about organizations that really do something for the United States to secure our freedoms and hold people accountable, Judicial Watch really deserves your time, effort, and a donation. But anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about. I think that people that feel that, like I do, that some areas of social media are oppressive, especially Facebook, then what they need to do is look at an alternative social media platform that they can communicate with other people on. And especially if you're a common sense conservative and you just want to see all sides of something on a much more tolerant website, then you should go to Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. And if you do that, please follow Dr. Ron Martinelli. And I'm there as Dr. Ron Crime.
Well, and I'll join you soon, and then I'll let people know what my handle is.
Great.
In the meantime, I just want to talk about America Out Loud for a second. Again, it's an alternative place that people can go and find real true American patriots with opinion stories, with fact stories, with radio shows, with podcasts. And I'm a contributing author. Writer, blogger on that site, and you can find me under Linda Martinelli and all of my articles, and you can find Dr. Ron under Dr. Ron's articles, but you can also listen and read from all of the wonderful hosts on America Out Loud. It's one of the most amazing places that we appreciate because of the honesty, because of the patriotism of the people that are involved on this platform. And I'll tell you where you can find it. You can go to Spotify or Stitcher or your Apple podcast. You can listen on iHeartRadio, and you can catch it on your Alexa if you so choose.
And if you have an Android device, you can certainly catch it there. Now, listen, like Linda says, and this is our fourth anniversary with America Out Loud. It is simply an amazing platform for common sense conservatives like you. And the people, the experience of the people that we are blessed to be associated with is absolutely amazing. Men and women, they come from the intelligence communities, the medical communities, the forensic communities, law enforcement, first responder communities. There are authors, prolific authors on the site. And America Out Loud has something that's really cool that I like, and that is the America Out Loud bookstore. And so if you go on America Out Loud, and it's a very easy, navigable site, and you go to bookstore, all you have to do is just click on the bookstore. It'll pop right up, and all sorts of books are going to be on there. Now, they move the bookstore books around all the time. There's a, in that application, it just moves them around. And so if you don't see the book or the author that you are interested in, all you have to do is, I think it's up at the upper right, go to the search engine, and it says the word search, and all you have to do is type in the name of the author, or type in the name of the book, or type in the name of the subject that you're looking for. And so, for instance, Dr. Ron has a best-selling book out right now, and it's called The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. And all you have to do if you want to order that book is you either type in Dr. Ron Martinelli, and bam, I'm going to pop up. And all you have to do is click on me, and you're going to see the image of the Black Lives Matter book. And all you do is click on that and you can order. Or if you forget who the author was, just type in Black Lives Matter and that book is going to pop right up and you can order that book.
And there are so many other books to choose from as well. So many of the contributors to America Out Loud also have books on the site. So a place well worth perusing while we're at home with COVID. There are so many articles, so many eye-opening things to read and to know about from people that are experts in their industry. We love America Out Loud, and we're out of here.
I saw that pause in your voice. We're out of here.